Welcome to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. This week, we are joined by some of the fastest women in the world. Those would be the women on the U.S. cross-country ski team, a number of whom are from Vermont or have connections to Vermont, who are considered serious contenders for an Olympic medal when the Winter Olympics begins next week in South Korea. Winning a medal in cross-country skiing is something that has not been done by the United States since 1976, when the lone Olympic medal for cross-country skiing was won by Vermont skier Bill Koch in a 30K race. Well, on this week's show, we're going to be joined by three skiers from the U.S. Olympic women's cross-country ski team, Liz Steven, Sophie Caldwell, and Jesse Diggins will all be joining us throughout the hour. In our first half hour, we're going to be joined by Liz Steven, is on the line with us, but we're also joined by Peggy Shin. She is a Vermont journalist from the Rutland area and the author of a book that's just out this month called World Class: The Making of the U.S. Women's Cross Country Ski Team. And we're also joined by Matt Whitcomb, the coach of that team. So I'll say welcome to Peggy, Matt, and Liz here on the Vermont Conversation. And let's start with Peggy. Peggy, can you just kind of lay the groundwork for this the steep climb that any cross-country team, but especially the U.S. women's team, has had to go through to get to where they are today as one of the top cross-country ski teams in the world?
Well, the Americans have traditionally not been known for their cross-country skiing. It's not really a sport that this country is known for. I think that's about to change. This team of women, I've been following for, gosh, some of them for 15 years since they were teenagers competing in Bill Koch races and in college. And they first caught my eye seriously in 2012 when four of them finished fifth in a World Cup relay in the Czech Republic. And I thought, wow, you know, how is this group of women who, you know, except for Keegan Randall, who had been winning some World Cup races or finishing on the podium in World Cup sprints for a number of years, the U.S. traditionally had not been very close to the World Cup podium, the top three. Suddenly they were fifth, and I thought, wow, you know, what's going on here? What happened? And I interviewed them, and I interviewed Matt, and everybody credited teamwork, and that really, I was intrigued by that because as an athlete growing up in the 70s and 80s, teamwork had not been something that helped my athletic career flourish, shall we say. So I was really intrigued by it, and it's been great to see this group of women in the last, since 2012. You know, Jessie's just a phenomenal, she's a medal threat in a number of different events now. Sadie Bjornsson's been on the podium in a couple different events. Keegan's been on the podium again this year, and Sophie Caldwell in the sprints. Three or four podiums, I think. So it's going to be
Paint a picture. When you talk about the surprise of women winning in a relay race, in a Nordic relay race, and for listeners not familiar with the lingo, Nordic skiing and cross-country skiing are synonymous. This is racing at the highest levels of cross-country skiing. So, Peggy, I mean, how far back were women in American women cross-country skiers, and who traditionally has dominated Nordic ski racing?
Well, back in the 70s, the Scandinavians who traditionally dominated it, Finland, Norway, Sweden, the Russians, the Soviets came on, you know, as soon as they were competing in the Winter Olympics in 1956, you know, straight through. Now the Russians, those were traditionally the powerhouse countries. The Americans back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, except for a couple of great performances like Nina Kempel and Vermonter Martha Rockwell finishing 16th in the 1976 Olympics, were traditionally finishing, you know, 30th in the 30s and 40s. There'd be a few in the 20s, and that was like an awesome day. So to see them, you know, getting into the top 10 and then finally onto the podium has been great.
So let's turn to Matt Whitcomb, the coach of the U.S. women's cross-country team. Matt, I know that you and your women skiers are calling. Where are you calling from? And for whoever's got their computer on with the email dinging, maybe you could mute that. But Matt Whitcomb, where are you joining us from?
Hi, Dave. Good to be here. I'm joining you from Seefeld, Austria, which is a bit serendipitous, perhaps, because this is where Bill Koch won his medal in 76.
Okay.
42 years ago. And we're with the whole team. We're holed up in apartments. We've hired a chef this week, and we're trying to live as large as we ever live and get as healthy and fit and fast as we ever have been before we take off for Korea this weekend.
So the picture that Peggy Shin just described is, a little bleak. You are the guys who come in, basically while everybody else is headed for the showers or whatever, for the Americans. You come onto this team. You were a coach at Burke Mountain Academy. Did you even think it was possible to somehow fashion a winning American cross-country team?
You know, Dave, one of my flaws, I think, is that I've never had a hard time believing, and Liz may laugh at this. It can be in things that are completely out of what is realistically attainable, but it's never, to me, been something I thought was out of reach. It's just a puzzle of figuring out how to get people to work together, and then no matter what activity you're playing or trying to accomplish, you can probably do it better than anybody else if your squad is working together.
Well, this is an unusual sport. You're competing as individuals, but also as a team. Explain kind of the dynamics of that and how tricky that is to, fashion these fiercely competitive individual skiers into a team.
Yeah, it's really challenging because while we say we must be a great team, in certain formats of racing, you're on the starting line by yourself, one athlete starting every 30 seconds. Or in the case of our team now, every race has only four starts allocated. In one case, in the team sprint, only two athletes get to start from our team. We're bringing a women's squad of 11. And so there is competition within your own team rather than just in Scandinavia or in Russia.
And how do you get buy-in to, how do you get a team to hang together when they're trying every day to beat one another?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's really, the puzzle, I think, is unlocked when everybody respects one another and they realize that they are, in fact, all in the same boat. And when you found this place, this place in your mind where you are truly happy when your teammate has a better race than you, then we're in a position where we can actually succeed and move together.
Well,
but when it's competitive against one another, which we certainly have fallen into from time to time, we are not the perfect team. And then our lives get really difficult and things become very stressful for the athletes. And then suddenly we hit our stride again and we find sympathy in one another. The girls look at one another as if they're looking at themselves and with compassion and empathy, and then things just start rolling.
We're talking this week with the skiers, coach, and an author who connected to the U.S. Women's Cross Country Ski Team. And let's turn now to one of the skiers, one of the many Vermonters or Vermont-connected skiers on this team. Liz Steven is from East Montpelier, a graduate. She had attended U32 High School, Burke Mountain Academy, and as of next week will be a three-time Olympian. Well, Liz, welcome to the Vermont Conversation from Austria.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
Well, first I have to kind of ask you about the connection. I know that Matt was your coach at Burke, but you were an alpine skier. What made you think to give up chairlifts and wide skis for this incredibly difficult alternative?
And that's a great question. Some days I find myself asking my own self that. Not really. It wasn't all my own idea. I grew up, like you said, in East Montpelier. My parents would take my brother Andy and I up to ski at Burke from when we were 3 years old. Every weekend we would go up on Saturday, up on Sunday, and I loved it, which I think that's the theme of sport in my life. It's been a real passion of not only the sport itself, of being outdoors, of being with my family, but just the people involved in the sports that I've been a part of have really changed my life and made my life what it is now, and it's why I'm still cross-country ski racing. But to answer your question, I went to Burke as an alpine racer, and then when I was about 15, a sophomore, I was moving up in an age category, and it started by you have to race on longer skis as you get into this next age category, and I am pretty short. I'm 5'2", almost, and had a lot of trouble turning them and wasn't able to make very many of the gates. It became really frustrating very quickly.
This is as an alpine skier.
On top of all that, this is at Burke, just training in the summer, kind of the summer before I decided to switch. And so the headmaster at Burke at the time, Kirk Dwyer, actually was the one who first put the idea in my mind, because I love to run. I was a cross-country runner at U32 and actually was a runner with the, kind of got Burke to start a team as well. And it was kind of my true passion. And he said, well, why don't you just try this cross-country thing? We have a new coach coming in named Matt, and you should meet him and just see if the sport is at all appealing to you. So I met Matt, and for any of you who have the pleasure of meeting Matt, he is quite charismatic and kind of somebody that you instantly want to be around. And he was kind of the kind of coach you look for as an athlete, I think, for me. And so that was the first selling point. And the second selling point was the team. I went to West Yellowstone, Montana. And the team instantly, like, I came out in my alpine gear for day one of training, and they were like, nope, go back in, and, like, taught me how to dress, taught me how to ski.
You literally showed up to a cross-country practice with alpine ski boots and skis? What were you thinking?
No, sorry, clothing.
Oh, clothing, okay.
Like, didn't really know this was, like, a spandex sport, so quickly learned that. You get a little sweaty out there.
Right. So, you know, Liz Stephen, one of the things that's remarkable, so this will be your third Olympics, which means you have stayed competing at a high level. So you were in the 2010 Vancouver Olympics, 2014 Sochi Olympics, now South Korea. That's an incredibly long time to be competing at the top level of any sport. You don't hear of this in other sports. How is it that you and, you know, I know this is not necessarily unique for cross-country skiers. Your teammate, Kicken Randall, is, what is this, I think her fifth Olympics or more?
Yeah, yep.
So
yes.
What's
yep.
the secret to staying so fast and strong for so long?
Well, you could tell me. Sometimes as you get older, it's definitely been a little bit of a struggle for me to figure out what keeps me fast. The last few years, you definitely, as you get older, you are a different athlete, and you take longer to recover, and different things maybe matter to you in your life than when you were a little kid. And so it is, it's a balance point, and I think it's been a really interesting path. But our sport, any endurance sport, you tend to see athletes that are on the older end of the spectrum compared to some of the skilled sports. And it's because our bodies take a long time to build up endurance. And so some of the best ski racers in the world are, you know, mid-30s, even late 30s. So that's one of the reasons, you know, this is a long-term sport. But also, as I mentioned before, I love what I do. I travel the world for half the year or more with the same people, and that sounds crazy, and certain days it isn't easy. Living out of a suitcase can get really old. Hotel rooms can get really old. You just want somebody who doesn't know anything about ski racing to talk to sometimes. But at the end of the day, this team and the people that I get to spend my life around are amazing, and that is why I'm still here. like Matt said, I mean, I learn something new every day from someone on the team. And to think that can still happen after spending 10 years with some of these people is pretty remarkable. And I think it comes down to really believing that individual sports are team sports too. And Matt was really the guy that really pushed that idea with our team. And I attribute a lot of the team success to Matt's really great coaching and ability to kind of wrangle people behind an idea.
Well, let me ask Matt Wickham, the coach of the U.S. Women's Cross Country team. So next week is the Olympics. I mean, these women have been competing on a very big stage, World Cup in Europe and throughout North America. What do you do as a coach to get ready for the Olympic Games next week? How do you keep them in the game, keep them at the right level of excitement, but perhaps not too much? What's the formula here?
You know, the formula is to keep it simple, Dave. One of the biggest mistakes that people will say that they've made at Olympics, namely in your first Olympics, is to do something differently. You go there and you try to you try harder, and when for your whole career you've already been trying as hard as you can, and you start just beating your head up against the wall, or you try something completely different, and it sounds so ridiculous, but it's really easy to do. And so we're in the place that we need to be right now. We just need to take these athletes and these coaches and the current mindset that we're all in, and the harmony that we've all struck this week in Seyfeld, and do what we've been doing. Our women's team won both races in the last World Cup. They won on Saturday with Sophie tying for first place for the sprint, and on Sunday, Jesse out-sprinted all the Norwegians and won the 10-kilometer skate. And so we don't need to do anything different. We just need to do the same. Keep cool. Enjoy each other.
How unusual. So speaking of this last weekend, and I just watched Sophie's literally photo finish in the sprint. I certainly couldn't tell who won, she or the Swiss skier that she tied with. How unusual is it for U.S. women to be the winners of a World Cup race?
Before 2007, it was non-existent. And then came along Keegan Randall, and she has now won somewhere in the region of 10 World Cups. I hope she's not listening, because I would love to just have that stat. But this is now Sophie's second victory. Liz has been on the podium half a dozen, perhaps 10 times, particularly in team events as well. Liz has been a relay skier for the team. And just this season, our team is somewhere hovering around 9 or 10 podiums. And two of them most recently are now victories. And so it is not that uncommon anymore.
As Matt, as I was mentioning with Liz, you've now been the coach as these women are, you're living with them through major life experiences. Kicken had a son just a few years ago. So what is this like for you to be on this journey, not only of racing, but of life?
It's an unbelievable education. It is, every day is so surprising. The more you know, the more you realize you know half as much as what you thought you did. And it's such an adventure every day. You never know what Keegan's son is going to come up with now. He's just living right down the road. Her dad is here this week helping take care of him, he being Breck. And it's just such an adventure, Dave.
So, Peggy Shin, you've got this new book, World Class, The Making of the U.S. Women's Cross Country Ski Team. You are also a journalist for the Olympics, the U.S. Olympic Team website. What can we expect? What should we be looking for next week from this remarkable women's ski team?
I think you should watch every race that these women are competing in. There are six races for the men and six for the women in cross-country skiing in South Korea. And the skiathlon, which is For the women, 7.5 kilometers of classic skiing, which is the traditional kick and glide. And then they go into a transition zone like triathletes do, and they change skis. And then they do 7.5 kilometers in the skate or the freestyle technique, which is that diagonal striding that looks a little bit like speed skating. So it's a 15-kilometer race. And Jesse Diggins has finished on the podium, a World Cup podium in that event before. She's a medal contender. There's also the 10K freestyle race. It's a distance race. And Jesse has won a world championship medal in that event, in addition to her win this past weekend in the mass start. Excuse me. And then the sprint classic race, Keegan and Sophie and Sadie could all win medals in that. And then the team really excels in the team events. Excuse me, the sprint, the team sprint, which is two competitors. And they'll be competing in the freestyle technique. And they trade off. They each have three legs. And one skates for, I don't know, I guess it's like 1 or 2 kilometers and tags the next one. They do that three times each. And they won, Jesse and Sadie won the bronze medal at the World Championships last year in the classic, in the team sprint, but it was a classic technique. And then the women's 4x5 kilometer relay, they finished fourth in the past 3 World Championships. And they've also been on the World Cup podium a number of times in that event. And they just really come together. They really ski together well as a team. They want to be on the podium with each other, and they really, those team events really push them, you know, way beyond what they can sometimes do in individual races.
And I want to mention there are several other women from Vermont on the cross-country team: Ida Sargent, Caitlin Miller, Caitlin Patterson, and biathletes Susan Dunkley, Claire Egan, and Emily Dreisgacker, biathlon being Nordic skiing and shooting combined. And we just have we'll save this for the second half, Peggy, to talk about the impact of this Craftsbury Green Racing Project, which is sending an extraordinary number of athletes to the Olympics. But I think we're going to have to, we've reached our halfway point. We're going to take a short break for the news, and we're going to let Matt Whitcomb, the coach of the U.S. Women's Cross Country Team, and Liz Steven, one of the skiers, go to make way for two of their teammates. In the second half, we'll have Sophie Caldwell and Jesse Diggins joining us, along with Peggy Shin. So Matt and Liz, thanks so much for joining us on the Vermont Conversation.
Thank you, Dave.
Thanks for having us, Dave.
And good luck next week. And you're listening to the Vermont Conversation, and we'll be back just after the news with more from the fastest women in the world. Welcome back to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. We're spending the hour this week talking with the fastest women in the world. Those would be the women of the U.S. Women's Cross Country Ski Team, who are headed next week to South Korea to compete in the Winter Olympics. In this half hour, we're joined once again by Peggy Shin, whose new book is called World Class, the Making of the U.S. Women's Cross Country Ski Team. And we're also joined by two of the women Olympians, Jesse Diggins. This will be her second Winter Olympics. She is from Minnesota, but trains at the Stratton Mountain School. And Sophie Caldwell, also a two-time Olympian, born in Rutland, grew up in Peru, Vermont, and attended school at Stratton Mountain School and Dartmouth. Her grandfather, John Caldwell, is a 1952 Olympian, and her father coaches at Stratton Mountain School. Jesse, Sophie, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we're excited to be part of it.
Okay. Well, okay, just before, as I was preparing for this, I had the excitement and pleasure to watch the video, Sophie, of your photo finish at a World Cup race on Saturday that you tied for first. And Jesse, I know you also won a World Cup race the following day, but Sophie, a photo finish to win, what was that like?
That was pretty exciting. I was actually sure I had finished the race in second, and I didn't find out that I had tied for first until, I think it must have been about 20 minutes after the finish. Someone came up to me and told me, so it was a very pleasant surprise. I honestly don't even remember lunging, but I'm really glad I did because it worked out nicely. But it was a very exciting day.
Let me just ask, I don't know if you're on a speakerphone, Sophie, but there's a little bit of echo. So if you could switch it to handset, that would improve it. Or if not, then we'll have to live with the echo. But that would be the request from this end. Jesse Diggins, you have been a phenomenon. You've right out of high school were racing at a national level and Olympic level. Tell me what you're doing to prepare for the Olympics next week. This will be your second Winter Olympics.
I guess I'm not really doing anything differently than I have been in the past. Because if something's working, you definitely don't want to change it. So just doing a peaking plan with my coaches that I've written and keeping having fun with the team, like going to training every single day focused on how I can get the most out of that day's training, how I'm going to get a little bit better, and then hanging out with the team. We've been having some awesome team dinners, team game nights. I'm going to try to go sledding tomorrow. Just, you know, trying to make sure that I don't over-focus on the game, I think, is a good way for me to have fun. And then when I'm having fun, that's when I race fast.
Okay. You know, I think I'm going to ask, I'm not sure if you're on the same phone line, but to hang up and call back, and we'll just get a better connection for you guys. It's very echoey on this end. And meanwhile, I'm going to turn to Peggy Shin, so you can do that right now. So, Peggy, one of the interesting parts in your new book, World Class, The Making of the U.S. Women's Cross Country Ski Team, you talk about what extraordinary athletes virtually all of these elite women are, but what often separates them is confidence. So explain what you've seen. What role does confidence play in for a cross-country skier?
Well, it's interesting because I think once you get athletes at this world-class level, they really are, there really is very little difference between them. So it really does come down to a mental game. And I usually think of sports more, you know, like tennis or alpine skiing, you know, that have a little bit more, they seem to have more skill involved, although cross-country skiing does have a lot of skill and finesse involved. But I think in endurance sports, what makes any athlete successful is they have to know that they belong. They belong on the podium. They deserve to win. And I didn't really think about that until I started researching this book and talking to these women. And as they came up through the ranks, you know, Keegan Randall was the one who was sort of forging the path. And she started finishing on the World Cup podium in 2007. And she was training with these women. She wasn't off on her own program, you know, with her own coach, doing her own thing because she was so much better than so many other people in cross-country skiing. And I think as they started training with her and realizing, like, wow, well, I can keep up with her in training, so then I can keep up with her in racing, and if she's beating everybody, then I can beat everybody. And I think it gets you from finishing, like, 10th or 20th to finishing on the podium when you really believe that you at the front.
Hmm. And do we have Sophie Caldwell and Jesse back? Okay.
Yes.
Sophie, let me ask, your grandfather, John Caldwell, is generally spoken of as kind of the godfather of cross-country skiing or ski racing. What influence did he have on your decision to race at the highest levels of your sport?
I think my grandfather has been a big part in my skiing career. You know, I come from a whole family of skiers, so my grandfather and uncle both were ski racers and went to the Olympics, and then my grandfather was a ski coach as well as my dad, and my mom ski raced and my siblings. So it was just kind of what we grew up doing, and I think when my dad and his siblings were born, they were put on skis at a very young age because it's what my grandparents loved to do, and so they kind of wanted to give us the same opportunity to fall in love with skiing that they had, and that just sort of trickled through generations. And as a result, a lot of people in my family do ski, whether it's recreationally or competitively. I think it's just a big part of our family, and I'm really proud to have a few generations of Olympians now, and it's really awesome because it's something we have in common. So I can share a lot of stories with my grandfather and compare what it used to be like to what it is now and places we've traveled.
And I should note that your cousin Patrick is also on the men's Olympic cross-country ski team.
Yes, he is. He was just named the Olympic team, which is really exciting.
So has your grandfather kind of given you any pearl of wisdom for competing on this big stage that that stays with you?
Well, he always has an opinion that he's willing to share, and it's pretty cute because I know he follows our racing closely because I always get an email, you know, within hours of finishing every race with kind of his thoughts and what he thought about it, whether it was good or bad. He doesn't sugarcoat things, so if it was good, he'll tell me it was good, and if it was bad, he'll tell me just that. But I enjoy hearing from him, and yeah, as far as the Olympics go, I think it's probably a lot different now than it was then. So I mean, he doesn't have any hard advice about what I should or shouldn't be doing, but I think he just has open ears and is excited to hear about the experience.
Jesse Diggins, let me ask you, I mean, you really burst onto the national and international racing scene at a very young age, I think right out of high school, age 19, was it?
Mm-hmm.
And you are, there's a description in Peggy Shin's book of you just going all out in one of your first international races, trying to take down the Olympic gold or silver medalist Kala from Sweden, as I recall that description. How do you get the confidence to, you know, come from nowhere right out of high school to think you can take down, you know, Olympic gold medalists?
I actually don't think I was confident. It was more like stupid, and I didn't have tactical experience at that point. So I was like, I'm just going to go so fast and so hard and ski until I blow up. But there is something to be said for just racing all out, because eventually you do get better fitness as you get older. You do get better technique and better strategic ideas. But yeah, my game plan back then was just to just absolutely ski as fast as I could and as hard as I could, because my technique was, quite frankly, pretty terrible. So that was my only play.
So what's changed with now, I don't know what this is, 6-8 years of experience?
I think just as you get older, I mean, now I've done over 150 World Cups, so I've learned so much from just watching all these other incredible women race, and seeing, okay, here's how to pace a race. Here's what works in a sprint. Here's what definitely doesn't work. And I've tried it all by now. And also, as you get older, you can train a little bit more. You learn how to recover and rest better. You learn about sports psychology and how to, you know, how to kind of have this belief in yourself even when things aren't going well. So I think just, yeah, you get a little bit of maturity as a racer.
Well, talk about that last bit for a moment. You know, in the Olympics, we focus on the fact that everybody, you know, they're all champions in their countries, and certainly you and Sophie and your teammates have achieved incredible success in national-level racing here. We don't talk a lot about the failures. How do you mentally survive just having a really rough patch that perhaps could last, you know, months, if not a whole season?
Yeah, there are rough patches for sure. I can't even tell you how many bad races I've had in my career. There's tons of them. But I think that is what makes you appreciate the good races. And I think you just gain perspective. When I was younger, a really bad race on the World Cup was devastating. I was like, oh my gosh, I had this chance. I really blew it. But you realize that you have more races to come, and even a race that is, quote, bad, you still learn so many things from it. Like, if it was bad because you went and blew up, well, then you've learned something about pacing, and you've learned how far you can push your body before things fall apart. So you learn a super valuable lesson from every single race that didn't go well, probably learning even more than the races that did go fairly well. So I think I just tell myself, like, hey, every time I fail, every time I screw up, I'm learning what not to do, and I'm going to take something from it instead of just go, oh, well, that sucks. I'm going to try to actually use it to my advantage.
You're listening to the Vermont Conversation, and we're talking with two of the members of the U.S. Women's Cross Country Ski Team who will be racing in the Olympics next week in South Korea, and also with author Peggy Shin. Sophie, I want to ask you one of the things we talked about in the first half with your coach, Matt Whitcomb, was the challenge of being both an individual athlete, where you're trying to win every race, including beating your own teammates, but also being a strong team. How do you do that?
Yeah, that's a good question, because our sport, for the most part, is an individual sport. But we really have made an effort to turn it into as much of a team sport as we can, and it helps to have events like the 4x5K relay or the team sprint, where you actually are competing as a team. But we also, you know, we're on the road together from November through March, pretty much in Europe, and we kind of become a second family. And as a result, I think you really learn how to become invested in everyone's results. And we spend all summer pushing each other to become better ski racers. And I think we really share our success with each other. And I think everyone, whenever someone does really well or wins a race or is on the podium, every member of the team can take a little bit of credit for that. And so even if you didn't have the race of your life, I think we've really done a good job of celebrating everyone's successes, being happy for each other, and yeah, just sharing that success across the board.
Let me ask you about, you know, doping has, and just the use of performance-enhancing drugs generally, you know, has resulted in Russia being disqualified as a country. Their athletes, as I understand, will race individually. How has this affected you? And maybe, Sophie, I'll give you the first crack at that question.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's hard because we are... Unfortunately, doping has become something in our sport. And, you know, you're over here sometimes competing against people who have been claimed to be dopers. But, you know, I think the best thing we can do is support clean sport and trust and push organizations to make moves towards clean sport. And, you know, we're all confident that we're clean, confident in our teammates, and all we can do is train the hardest we can, race the fastest we can, and trust that the system will work and that hopefully we will soon have a day with clean sport.
Are you aware at international races, I'm sure there must be rumors swirling, what do you hear? What is in the air when there's a suspicion that a team or an athlete is doping? And I mean, this is not abstract. You've had in the Nordic skiing racing world in the past Olympics, a number of athletes have been stripped of their medals when it was later found that they were using performance-enhancing drugs or doping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard because the ski world is a pretty small world. And even though back home it's not the biggest sport, in some of these countries it is. So that news can be all over the headlines. And, you know, we've been in situations where we're sharing a hotel with people who, you know, maybe it just came out that they've been caught for doping, and we'll be sitting at a dinner table next to them. And, yeah, kind of like I said before, I think, you know, we aren't personally attacking any individual athletes or countries. We're just doing the best we can and supporting clean sport.
Jesse Diggins, are there obstacles faced by women in particular in competing in high-level sports that you've experienced or observed?
You know, what I think is really awesome about cross-country skiing is it is one of the, maybe, hopefully not one of the few sports, but one of the ones I know of that is really equal between the men and the women. I train the same kind of hours as the guys. I train the same intervals as them. We don't race the same distance, but we're often racing around the same amount of time. And importantly, we win the same amount of prize money. We pull in the same amount of fans. We're treated equally by FIS. And I think that's really, in my book, that is one of the most important things ever because, yeah, if me and the guy next to me are training and working the same, we should be paid the same too. And I think that's awesome. And so I feel really good about this sport where we have the same opportunities as the guys. I don't feel like I've ever been shut down because I am a woman, and I feel really fortunate about that because I know that's not the situation in every sport.
Peggy Shin, you've written about the history of high-level women's Nordic skiing, and you've this is fairly new. Even as recently as the 60s, high-level Nordic ski racing was considered, women were considered too frail for this.
Well, I think it was fascinating researching the history of women's cross-country skiing and women's endurance sports in general. Women were allowed, FIS, the Fédération Internationale du Ski, allowed allowed the IOC to include women's cross-country skiing in the Olympics in 1952. However, the United States did not field a team until 1972. And we first sent a team internationally to the 1970 World Championships. So I think in the Scandinavian countries, if you look at the results from the Olympics in 1952 and 56 and 60, et cetera, through the 60s, you'll see a lot of the Scandinavians, a lot of the Finnish women and the Soviets and the Norwegians and Swedes finishing in the top 10 or 20. In the United States, I think in the 60s, I mean, I was born in the 60s, and I remember hearing some of my older relatives like, oh, my goodness, women shouldn't be competing in endurance sports. It's bad for their health. And I think that that attitude was still prevalent even in what I consider modern day. And it took a few decades for people to kind of get over that and realize that endurance sports are actually very healthy.
Sophie Caldwell, you're on the U.S. women's cross-country ski team, but it's really just one part of the U.S. ski team. And that includes, media stars like Michaela Schifrin, Lindsey Vonn. How do you, live with sort of the difference in attention and that some of your alpine skiing brethren get compared to the cross-country skiers?
Yeah, it can be tough sometimes, especially when we're back home, because alpine snowboarding and a lot of the U.S. ski team sports are a lot more popular in the U.S., but I think it's often pretty refreshing to come to Europe, because in countries like Norway and Sweden, cross-country skiing is the most popular sport in the country, and their cross-country skiing stars are their celebrities. They're the equivalent of football players or baseball players back home. And so it's pretty cool to come over here and just see the sport really ingrained in their culture starting at a young age. You know, there are tons of kids out on the trails learning to ski. That's just what people do. And I think it gives us something to strive for, because I don't think cross-country skiing is a lost cause at home. And I think it's really gained some momentum and popularity in the recent years, especially with the success of our team. And I think, you know, if we can keep doing well, showing that we're having fun, it'll catch on. And I think it's a really healthy, wonderful lifestyle, and I think it attracts really good people. And so my hope is that it will catch on in the U.S.
So, Sophie Caldwell, what's your goal next, starting next week at the Winter Olympics, your personal goal?
I don't know if I've sat down and really set a concrete results goal, because I think the Olympics is about so much more than my result. That said, the U.S. women have never won a medal before. And, you know, I think we're coming in with the best team ever. And there's a good chance that we could win a medal. And whether that's for me, one of my teammates, or a team event, I'm going to be really proud to be part of this Olympic team. And whether it's the medals around my neck or not, I'm going to feel like I'm a part of it. And I think That would be a dream come true. But I know that I always ski the best when I'm happy and enjoying myself, and I had one of the best races of my life at the last Olympics, and I think that was largely due to the fact that I was just so excited to be there and soaking in the Olympic experience. And so my hope is that I can kind of go in with the same mindset, just 4 years older and maybe 4 years more mature. And, we'll see what happens.
Jesse Diggins, same question. What is your goal when you start racing in South Korea at the Olympics next week?
One of my biggest goals, and how I'm going to be defining success for myself at the Games, is if I can cross that finish line and look back and say, I did everything I could. I didn't hold anything back. I left nothing out. I've spent the last 8 years of my life, you know, dedicating it all towards skiing and making decisions with skiing first in mind. And yeah, I think as a team, we've all had a lot of different things that we've given up for skiing, but I think we've gained a lot through skiing, which makes it completely worth it. So for me, if I can go out there and race a gutsy race and absolutely leave nothing in the tank and know that I've left no stone unturned over the last few years, then that will be success. And, you know, as Sophie said, whether or not that results in a medal, I think there are a lot of different ways to define success. And a medal is probably the most shallow of all those ways. But coming in strong as a team, coming in with this awesome team atmosphere and making sure that we're looking out for each other and taking care of one another through the games, I think that's the most important thing I could ever do.
And in 30 seconds, Jesse, let me ask you, there's a lot of young girls racing on obscure high school teams in cold places in Minnesota and Vermont and Alaska. What's your message to those younger skiers?
My message to you guys is to just do what you love. If you enjoy skiing, if you have fun being out there with your teammates, that's awesome. That is what it's about. It's not necessarily about the race results, but if you just keep doing what you love, you're going to get toward, you know, to your goals, because that's how it happened for all of us. We really fell in love with skiing and being part of a team that's bigger than ourselves. And we worked hard towards being good teammates and just going to practice every day and getting to, you know, oh, we're going to do these awesome intervals, or we're going to go run up a mountain today. Like, how cool is that? So just have fun with skiing and keep doing it.
Okay. All right. Well, Jesse Diggins and Sophie Caldwell, both members of the U.S. Olympic excuse me, women's cross-country ski team. Thank you, but most of all, good luck at the Olympics starting next week.
Thank you.
And Peggy Shin, thanks so much for joining us, the author of the new book, World Class, The Making of the U.S. Women's Cross-Country Ski Team. Thanks for joining us on the Vermont Conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
And that does it for this week's show. You can listen to this and all shows at VermontConversation.com. We'll be back next Wednesday at 1. I'm David Goodman. Thanks for listening to the Vermont Conversation.